Welcome to this week's episode of CT Real Estate Radio. I am Chaz Cook, joined by Rob Wallace of the One Team at William Ravis Real Estate, and back from being under the weather, or maybe he was just dodging the bullets that he's going to get today, Brian Skelly from William Ravis Mortgage.
Good to be
gentlemen,
back.
How are we doing?
Good.
Good to be back. Welcome. Feeling 100%?
Feeling great.
All right, we're going to take you down a few notches because we're going to kick this show off. We're coming out of the gates firing with interest rates. And you've got a hot topic on it because you were right and someone else was wrong, and the person who was wrong shouldn't have been wrong.
Yeah, you know, I've said it before, I'll say it again. You got to be careful of these interest rate forecasts. And we'll tell you why in just a minute here. It was a big week for mortgages. Cut right to the chase here. The big day was Tuesday to Wednesday. Mortgage News Daily, who reports an average daily mortgage rate amongst multiple lenders average, said on Tuesday it was 7.06. Wednesday shot up to 7.34.
What do we think that was the cause of that?
Oh, we're going to get into that. That's for sure. Inflation, the big I. But why about inflation? So I'm not going to go so far as to say Fannie Mae was wrong and that I was right. I'm not saying that. But
if we had to make a case,
they did revise their forecasts. That did happen. And that actually happened a few weeks ago on March 19th before this data. So at the beginning of the year, right around Christmas, I mean, the average rate was like around, I'm going from memory, but I think it was like roughly 6.7 at that time. Fannie Mae came out with their forecast along with all kinds of other organizations. You know, NAR came out with a forecast. Most of the big banks had forecasts. The Mortgage Bankers Association had forecasts. And generally, most people were forecasting rates would be lower at the end of the year. And they're still saying that. But Fannie Mae, on March 19th, revised their forecast. Initially, they had predicted a 5.9% end of the year. They're now saying 6.4.
So they
increased their forecasted rate for the end of the year by 0.5%.
What did they change it for the first quarter or maybe first half of the year, or do they not break it down on that level? Because a lot of the experts do. They do it like in the first quarter, I expect it to be around here, you know, in second quarter through here.
They probably did. I was just recently reading their end of the year forecast before the show today. And I thought that was really interesting. And they're saying basically based on the recent data. And I think the lesson here is really any forecast, you got to take it with a grain of salt. I mean, these are the smartest mortgage people in the world trying to guess what rates are going to be at the end of the year. And, you know, in just 3 months, they've changed their forecasted rate by 0.5%.
Right.
And, you know, people ask me all the time what rates are going to do. And, I'll say something like, well, a lot of forecasts are predicting rates are going to go down later this year. But we really just don't know. And it's just the data changes. So the really interesting thing that happened on Wednesday is we now have 3 months in a row of stronger than expected inflation numbers. So inflation,
especially jobs, right? Jobs have continued to be up at least six figures every month.
Unemployment fell last week, which is like kind of the opposite of what you want if you're trying to fight inflation. And then the consumer price index, which is probably the number one measure of inflation. It's just basically what they do is they take a whole bunch of products and services and they say, how much does it cost to buy all this stuff this month compared to last month? That's what it is. It went up 0.4% from February to March. And the previous month, it also went up 0.4% from January to February. So, you know, just as a quick recap, inflation was at 9.1% in June of 2022. We've been working on getting it down. Things were looking really good at the end of 2023. They got it under 3%. But now, like, you do have 1 month of it not going the way you want it. Okay, that's a blip.
Right.
You got 2 months, not quite a trend yet.
We had
3 months in a row of inflation going up when everybody wants it going down. That's not good. So, you know, a lot of experts are now revising their forecast. I mean, everybody seems to be in the consensus. The Fed's almost entirely not going to cut rates in June. Of course, things could change between now and June. I mean, that's the thing that we're talking about is you can't rely too much on these forecasts.
So we're confident they're not going to cut rates, but what's our opinion on will they raise rates? Or do you think they're just going to continue to hold strong? Because now, like you said, we have 3 months of data. Yeah, where they didn't do a rate hike and they said they were going to freeze, hoping that they would be able to continue to cut inflation, but it's actually gone the opposite way because they stopped doing the rate hikes.
That's a good point.
What do you think the probability of them kicking it up?
So far, nobody's talking about rate increases. The Fed themselves are still saying that they're planning to cut rates, but they're saying that it's going to be longer than they originally expected or previously forecasted. But they always do have a little asterisk anytime they say what they're thinking about doing. They always say it's going to depend on the data.
Right.
And this is what they're talking about. You know, when the news comes out that's different than what's people expected, that's what moves the markets. That's why rates go up and down. And it's interesting, you know, this news about what's going on in the economy has a bigger impact on the rates going up and down than, you know, the actual act of the Fed increasing or lowering the rates. So, I mean, we saw went up more than 0.25% in one day. That's a huge jump in interest rate world.
So it doesn't sound like it when you're just like, oh, we went from 7 to 7.25. That's a quick, rough estimate here. You don't need to get the calculator out for it. But buying power wise, did somebody just lose $15,000-$20,000 in buying power in that 0.25% jump?
Something like that. Yeah.
Approximately.
You know, their payment went up. I mean, that will have an impact on demand for housing, which, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about that later in the show, but it's getting more competitive in the spring. Yeah. So, you know, when you're looking at a house on Monday and then on Thursday, the payment goes up by
$200,
probably not quite that much, but maybe 40 or 50 bucks. Yeah. I mean, that makes a difference. So yeah, it's going to have an impact and, you know, we'll see how things go, but you know, a bird in the hand's worth two in the bush. If you got a property under contract,
you're in a really good place.
Lock in your rate because we just don't know what the future holds.
And so you were here last week, but we did talk about it. So you mentioned like the inventory and the competition. For the first time in 12 months, we went 12 months straight of sitting at 2 months of supply for single family homes in the state of Connecticut. In March, we saw our first increase in a year. We jumped to 2.1.
The supply went up.
The supply went up by 0.1 of a month.
2.1.
From 2 to 2.1. So,
well, that's interesting. Yeah, I'm writing a lot of pre-approvals of people that are not getting their offer accepted. Some people are, but...
Well, I told the story last week. I wrote an offer 2 weeks ago. We were 1 of 15.
Yeah.
Right? And it was a moderately priced house in Westbrook. It was on for $375. Obviously, we bid over. Mm-hmm. We did make it to the final four, but we still ended up getting beaten out by it.
Well, it's funny. I keep hearing the agents saying things like, oh, we were in the top three. We're in the top four. Right. But like, but we still don't have a house. We don't have a house yet.
Brian, I'm also curious, and we'll get into this in the next segment when we come back here, but I'm curious to get your opinion on what you think is continuing to drive the job market, how unemployment's going down, for prices going up, right? What is happening, right? They raised rates as high as we thought they could to keep it manageable. But for whatever reason, the economy just continues to fight back. So we're going to dive a little bit deeper into that when we come back on CT Real Estate Radio on 94.9 News Now and Stimulating Talk. Welcome back to CT Real Estate Radio on 94.9 News Now and Stimulating Talk, brought to you by Service Station Equipment. I am Chaz Cook, joined by Rob Wallace of the One Team at William Ravis Real Estate, and Brian Skelly, the mortgage guru from William Ravis Mortgage, is here with us. And before we went to break, we were talking about inflation and how the Fed has done everything they possibly can. Well, not everything they possibly can. They've done a lot to try and break the economy to get inflation to come down, but we just continue to surge on. So Brian, what are some things that you're seeing, or what's your opinion on why we're not seeing that decrease that they anticipated or that they hoped for?
Yeah. So, I mean, the Fed doesn't have a lot of tools. You know, there's certain things they can do. They can cut the federal funds rate, which is different than the mortgage rate. So the Fed actually controls the rate at which different banks lend money to each other. Mm-hmm. And that kind of trickles down into like personal loan rates and credit cards and all that and savings and stuff. But that's what they're trying to do when they're increasing the rates, is just kind of like slow down the economy. You know, not so much that we push it into a recession, but enough that,
well, there's that word again.
Slows down.
That word that only comes into play when people want it to come into play, because by definition, we've been through two or three of those in the last 24 months.
I don't know if, well,
not full blown, but based off of what the clear definition is of what a recession is, it's two down quarters.
That word was thrown around.
Did we have two down quarters?
We did. We had it. So the second half of 2023 and the second half of 2022 were both down.
Okay.
So we had a down, then we had a flat, call it up, and then another down.
Okay. I'm going to table that topic, and we're going to keep going with the original question, which is what's causing the inflation. So I did hear an interesting interview on NPR earlier this week with an economist, and he was saying that there's certain costs are just not really impacted by interest rates.
Right.
So like the cost of healthcare,
gas,
childcare, gasoline. Yeah, not really, you know, but actually the, I read one article from Reuters.com this week that said gasoline and shelter were the, more than half of the increase in the consumer price index, gasoline and shelter.
Shelter makes sense. We know that.
Which we're we'll talk about shelter. That's our expertise. But the gasoline, I'm thinking about it. Like, I mean, I was paying like $3 a gallon for gas like 30 years ago. Yeah. It really hasn't gone up in price that much.
No, $370, $380 is what I'm paying now. Like I have to get the mid-grade.
Like what did a sandwich cost at the deli 30 years ago? Like $4
And now I got a sandwich like from a local deli here in Guilford yesterday, and it was $15. So yeah, I probably could have got that same grinder 30 years
ago. It was probably $5 Yeah.
Pizza, you know, you're paying $30, $40, $50 now. It was like $10.
Yeah, there was a deli I used to go to an old line across from A&P back in the day with coffees.
Oh, Andy's. Coffee's Market.
Not the one by the lake, but the one that was across by the A&P. It's a Dunkin' Donuts.
That was just coffees. Yeah, then the one down on
there was two coffees. Yep. There was that one. I used to be able to get it, and I remember I would go there in 2005, like every day for lunch. I could get a bagel sandwich full of turkey with fixins and veggies and everything on it. $3.50, Chaz. I used to pay $3.50 for a bagel sandwich with turkey.
Now, and you're dating yourself too by saying 30 years ago, too. So,
well, 2005, that's 20 years ago.
20 years ago. Yeah,
my first year in the mortgage business.
There you go.
I was new. I couldn't afford $5 for sandwich.
But still, $3.50 for a coffee and a sandwich. Like, I would take that all day.
But, you know, so the cost of a sandwich has, like, tripled, basically. Yep. But has the cost of gas tripled? No. Price of gas is, like, relatively the same. But
well, it's interesting because we've seen more of it. Gas has been one of the few, what do you want to call it, industries that where when we do see a huge increase, right, and we're paying, like, $4.25, $4.30 a gallon – that never lasts. And yes, it comes back down to that $370, $380. It doesn't go back down to the $3 mark. But with so many other things like lumber, like the price of lumber has come down, but it hasn't come down anywhere close to what we've seen pre-pandemic, right? Yeah. But gas is one of those that fluctuates. And don't worry, we're heading into summer. Gas prices are going to go up because they know that we're going to be using a lot more of it.
Close as $5, but you go out west, I mean, you're paying $8.
Oh, yeah, they're paying $7, $8. But here in Connecticut, but I think that's a really interesting point is how gas has probably the most fluctuation on a short-term basis out of all the industries that they look at.
Yeah,
definitely.
I think they've increased the domestic production of oil, and I guess, I don't know, I guess there's more oil out there than I thought. Yeah, I mean, I would have expected that we'd be running out of oil and the prices would be going up, but I guess there's still quite a bit of it left out there.
Yeah, our earth always produces it. it ain't going nowhere.
I heard this stat, it was probably 5-10 years ago, I heard this stat, we're going to go off on one of our little tangents here, that we have enough oil reserves. I think we keep like 20 or 30 years like as a reserve as a country, just in case, like, you know, World War III happens, something crazy.
Right.
That if we started tapping into that and selling it back to ourselves, you know, 50 cents on the dollar compared to what we're getting it from overseas, that would be enough to fund a renewable energy source project. I don't know if that is still accurate, but that was like some information that was going around 10, 15 years ago. It's like, why don't we just start using all reserves? But they're just being cautious because they're like, well, what if we end up needing those reserves?
True.
So back and forth.
So this gets into, this is really interesting. It just reminded me of, so there's this famous economist. I just had to look it up. 1798, there was this guy, Thomas Robert Malthus. He famously predicted that the short-term gains and improved living standards wouldn't be sustainable because there was no way that we as a society could produce enough food to keep up with the population growth.
Okay.
So this was like over 200 years ago. This guy basically predicted that at the rate that the human population was growing, there's no way we could make enough food for everybody. But what happened? Like, we have plenty of food. Like, well, right? I mean,
we call it food, air quotes for you 94.9ers out there listening, right? We're going to call it food that's on some of those shelves. But
yeah, I'm not going to get into that topic.
Well, what's happened is that as we've just become, we experienced an exponential increase in our ability to more efficiently produce food in a way that he just didn't imagine would be possible.
Right.
that like one guy in Indiana with a tractor could produce truckloads and truckloads and truckloads of grain. Like he just didn't.
He never met
that.
The McDonald's family.
You know, he didn't.
Yeah, he never saw them coming.
So, I mean, it's similar. It's kind of what happened with oil too. Like, right. You know, people were like, oh, we're going to run out of oil, but like, we're just getting better and better at like getting this stuff out of the ground.
Right. Well, and then you're seeing like the hybrid cars too. Like my wife has a hybrid car. So, you know, her old SUV, same model, but you know, this one's just, I don't know, 10 years newer or whatever it is, mm-hmm. you know, she was getting like 17, 18 miles to the gallon. Now she's got the hybrid. She's getting like 35 miles to a gallon because it's splitting its fuel burning with the batteries as well.
Yeah, so. That's true. Yeah, that has. And we got people are getting solar panels. We're getting very sidetracked, but we could geek out on this all day. So back to shelter. So shelter isn't a big part of inflation. I've said this before on the show. What the Federal Reserve could do is they could start buying mortgages.
Right.
And they did it during COVID to stimulate the housing market. And they did it after 2008 to help, you know, avoid a recession. They could buy mortgages. So if shelter is one of the biggest impacts in inflation, which it wasn't in the beginning, and in the beginning, like all kinds of stuff was causing inflation, but now shelter is like one of the number one things. They could keep rates high on like credit cards and personal loans and stuff like that to kind of keep the economy from growing too fast, start buying mortgage-backed securities, and that would cause mortgage rates to drop. It would cause shelter prices to probably go down. You get more people to sell their house, all these people that don't want to sell their house because they're stuck in a 3% interest rate. So anybody at the Federal Reserve, if you're listening over here at Real Estate Radio, we're hoping you start buying some mortgage-backed securities. We'll see if my prediction comes true.
We'll see, because I mean, it's affecting everyone, right? I mean, we have a new article here from a recent Redfin report that 1 in 5 Americans are making big sacrifices to afford monthly housing costs. According to the new Redfin report, roughly half of all Americans are struggling to afford housing payments, with 1 in 5 making big sacrifices to cover the cost, including skipping meals, working extra hours, and delaying medical care. Which is, that's also interesting to me, right? Because
I think
we're hiring, right? Jobs are going up, but exactly. Then there's still room for people to work overtime. And I mean, don't even get me started on like healthcare. We're gonna avoid that part of it, but that's a whole nother racket, as Byron would like to say. But I mean, just the cost, like if it's not offered by your employee for a family of three, you're probably paying between $800 and $1,000 a month.
Stuff.
Yeah. So I can see that, right? Like I have to pay $1,000 a month because I have, you know, a family that needs health insurance. I have a young child. They need shots, immunizations, all those things, right? So, okay. Like, where am I going to pull that extra money from to put towards the health insurance? And oh, by the way, I still have to pay my mortgage, so we have a roof over our head.
And what's the Federal Reserve going to do about that? I mean, there's really not a lot they can do, I mean, to adjust healthcare costs, you know.
Oh, I'm sure they could figure out a way to regulate some of these companies that, like, so, I mean, our health insurance.
Well, there's
like
a lot of departments in the federal government, I mean, that haven't figured out how to make
it. We pay a pretty penny and we don't get any type of coverage. It's like you go to the doctors and the bill says it's like, you know, $200, and it's like, oh, what do I owe? $170.
It's crazy, yeah.
Like, what? You cover $30?
Yeah.
Like what? That's like nothing. That's like a week's worth of health insurance.
Your health insurance does not cover this or that.
Right.
And yeah, it's insane.
Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, we said that this was covered, but no, actually it's not. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's an interesting one. We can have a whole, not for this show, but someday we'll have a debate on medical care and the things they could do better. But anyways,
yeah,
because
we love it when the people outside our industry tell us how to do it.
You know, there's a lot of countries in the world that offer universal health care to their residents, to the people, you know, that live there. And their economies are a lot healthier than ours. I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah.
So maybe we could learn a thing or
two.
He's
on to something.
But anyway, so boomers who struggle to afford housing are most likely 27.5% to dip into retirement savings, followed by Gen Xers, 15.5%, Millennials, 13.5%, and Gen Z at 6.5%. I mean, I think they go on to say that like Gen Z isn't really tapping into their retirement savings because they don't really have one, because they're just getting into the workforce. Mm-hmm. That's a big number I don't like to see. You know, almost 30% of boomers are having to dip into their retirement savings just to be able to like afford to live.
Yeah.
Now, these are the people that like built the country that we now live in, right? The boomers, the greatest generation they were known as.
They're struggling.
Yeah. And the older boomers, we know they control 1/7 of the world's wealth. So like, they're the more affluent generation.
And right. First time home buyers too. I do see an increasing number of people saying like, okay, I'm going to tap into my 401k to buy my first house.
Yep.
Which is, I mean, there's certainly worse things you can do with your money than buying your first house. But it would be nice if folks didn't have to do that and they had their first house and a retirement account. Would be nice.
Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah, the Redfin report goes on to say that 1,494 respondents, 49.9% of all those surveyed, said they sometimes regularly or greatly struggle to afford their monthly rent or mortgage payments. Redfin went on to ask the respondents, which of the following, if any, changes or sacrifices did you make in the past year to afford monthly housing costs, including mortgage, rent, insurance, parking, heating, cooling, electricity, or homeownership dues? Skipping meals, yeah, the additional work hours, bridge the gap, and 17.9% borrowed money from family or friends, too. Put medical treatments on hold. So those are some big things that we don't like to see happen, but we're going to have to come to some type of balance here, right? They can't just keep hiking rates to make things more expensive and housing more expensive and harder to get. And people can't keep skipping meals and skipping their health care. Yeah. So we're going to keep a close pulse on this one. And we are also going to be right back on CT Real Estate Radio on 94.9 News Now and Stimulating Talk. Welcome back to CT Real Estate Radio. I am Chaz Cook, joined by Rob Wallace of the One Team at William Ravis Real Estate. That season is over unless you're a roller skater because they are out streeping the suites. So it is a prime time to be out there rollerblading and roller skating. All right, before we get into the rewind, blades or skates?
Blades.
Blades or skates? Don't let me down, Skelly.
Skateboard.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. I'm the only true roller skater here. I had a pair of blades, man. But
I had a pair.
In Groton, Connecticut. In the 90s. Skate Town, USA. Yeah. And I spent my whole middle school, every Sunday, they had like open skate, like 11 to 2, 11 to 3. We all did our birthday parties there.
So I grew up in Groton. Did you go to the skate park?
Not the skate park. No, just Skate Town, USA, the indoor roller skating rink.
Oh, yeah.
Over by the Burlington Coat Factory. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I used to rollerblade at Hammonasset State Park when I was in the 90s. Right, you were rollerblading too? Yeah.
Now, did you have like the tight shorts with like the fluorescent tank top on too?
No, I wasn't that cool.
Me either. I was too young. I missed it, you know.
Yeah, I was too young.
I tell you, I could zoom around that rink. I could shoot the duck, man. Oh, the hardest part is when you got going so fast and you're like, all right, I'm going to jump out here. There's an opening. I'm going to jump out here. And then you just jump out and you grab the railing and you spin yourself around.
What about ice skating? Y'all ever ice skated?
I ice skate. Yeah, well, I'm not very good at it, but I can do it.
I love it.
That's very similar to rollerblading, but yeah, give me a four wheel spread apart. Give me my brake in the front there so I can just drag my foot behind me. And I'll tell you, I miss those days.
I can do the hard stops.
Yeah. Bring back Skate Town USA. Here we go.
Not good on the ice.
Roller skating ring. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, it was just like a big open ring. Yeah. Yep. So that was a lot of fun. That was a little trip down memory lane. I bet you a lot of 94.9ers out there also visited Skate Town USA. but I bet you a lot of 94.9ers out there want to hear the One Team Weekly Rewind too. So we got to get to that because it is brought to us by Service Station Equipment, your residential tanking specialist, Dougie Braun and the boys. If you have any question about your indoor oil tank or even underground oil tank and you need to get that thing removed, you can reach out to Service Station Equipment at 1-800-801-TANK. They will come over, they will evaluate the situation, make a couple of recommendations, and then when it is time, they will pull all the permits, remove everything, clean everything up, install the new tank. It'll be better than it has ever been before. So make sure you reach out to them. And I'm saying it every week in anticipation. We had a 65 degree day this week.
Mm-hmm. Almost 70.
Almost time for that Irish Springs pool water. So keep thinking about that when you're getting ready to open your pool. You can call the Irish Springs pool water truck to come and fill it up. All right. Six new listings. And this is kind of entertaining because out of our six new listings, I think five out of the six are under contract.
Wow.
So first up, we had 16 Laurel Street in Waterford, Connecticut. This hit the market for $579,000. Three bedrooms, two baths, just over 1,800 square feet, but it is under contract. So congratulations to Zoe on that one. This was in a great little beach community, adorable little house. So she was on the market for 4 days, and she is under contract. So congrats, Zoe, on that one. Next up, we've got 2 Cross Drive in Waterford, Connecticut. This one hit the market for $475,000. Three bedrooms, 2.5 baths, just under 2,300 square feet. This is our lone still active home on the One Team Weekly Rewind. It's been on the market for 5 days. You've got a monthly HOA of $4 for the Governor's Landing neighborhood, and you can step into this inviting home near state parks and town beaches, tucked back off a cul-de-sac. You can enjoy the quiet and private yard from this updated colonial fenced-in rear yard, great for pets or little ones. Comfortably sized with an open floor plan, newer gourmet kitchen, open to dining room and family room, and it's also great for entertaining. So if you are looking in the Waterford area, you want to check out 2 Cross Drive for $475,000, you can reach out to mary.pula@ravis.com.
What do you think that $4 covers?
I have no idea. Like what do you beach. Really? What do you? $48 a year? Like, what do you get? I mean, it's Governor's Landing. It's not a huge neighborhood to begin with. So, I mean, I can tell you. So ours is, I think ours is like 125. And we've got our own little beach. So we've got our own little beach. We got a little turnaround. You know, there's a kid that sits at the turnaround to make sure nobody parks there, and there's a kid that sits in the parking lot to make sure you have your pass. Mm-hmm. So they take that into account, plus the beach cleanup, and then we've got a little clubhouse, like maintenance, things like that. So I think that's extremely affordable at 125.
I agree.
But I also think it depends on the size of your house, your property taxes. So, you know,
true.
We're happy with that. But we'll have to ask Mary about that. We'll get her back on the show. It's been a while since we had Mary Poole on. Mary, if you're listening, we'd love to have you come back on CT Real Estate Radio. All right. Next up, we've got 74 Witch Meadow Road in Salem, Connecticut. This hit the market for $448,000. 3 bedrooms, 1.5 baths, just under 2,500 square feet. Not going to go too deep on this one because it is under contract. So congrats, Mary, on 74 Witch Meadow Road in Salem, Connecticut, for being under contract. This one lasted 8 days. So barely over a week. Next up, we've got 396 Raymond Hill Road in Montville, Connecticut. This hit the market for $385,000. 3 bedrooms, 2 baths, just under 1,700 square feet. Built in 1996. I got to tell you, this wraparound deck is calling to me. I wish I was like looking for a place in Montville because it has a gorgeous wraparound deck. Also 2.1 acres, but it is also under contract. So congrats, Tina, on getting that one listed and under contract. This was a beautiful home out on the Raymond Hill Road. Raymond Hill Road is off of 163, so kind of tucked back.
Yeah, I saw some close to 395. I love that listing. She has a nice one.
Yep. All right, next up, we've got 26 Chester Court in Salem, Connecticut, on the market for $725,000, brought to us by Rob Wallace. Tell us all about it.
Oh, thank you, sir. It is a 4-bed, 2.5-bath, just under 3,300 square feet, almost 5 full acres. It's a beautiful home.
Look at that indoor pool, in-ground pool.
In-ground pool, yep, and it's heated. We are at the end of a cul-de-sac, so you're close, you know, Norwich Town and stuff like that in Salem. You got a nice little town there. Salem Prime Cut. It's my favorite place to go get my meats.
Oh, you're right off of Route 85 near the dinosaur place.
Yeah.
So you're, I mean, and you're in Salem, and so we were talking about this pre-show. If you live in Salem, you also get access to Eastline Public Schools. Because Salem doesn't have their own like middle school and high school. They've got an elementary school.
I didn't know that. I don't have to.
So you can be a resident of Salem and attend a top 12 in the state.
Well, that's high good school. To know.
So, good to know.
It's good to know.
Is that great little ice cream shop? Is that still there by that the farm?
Is, yes, it is. You got it. Well, that you got to go down Route 82 like you're heading towards like Route 11.
It's near the dinosaur.
Yeah, Salem ice cream. Place, yeah. It's about 2 miles away from it.
So good.
But yeah, brand new to the market. 725. Come check it out.
And we're going to be giving you some opportunities to check it out later on this weekend in the open houses. Mm-hmm. All right. Our final new listing of the week is 1058 Peck Lane in Cheshire, Connecticut. Hit the market for $420,000. 3 bedrooms, 1.5 baths, 1,724 square feet, built in 1997, but it is under contract. So congrats, Emily White, on getting this one listed in under contract. They had an open house last Sunday. I believe they had over 50 parties come through and they wound up with close to 20 offers. And there was like 2 or 3 agents just managing the open house because there's so many people in and out.
Wow.
So Cheshire is a hot market. If you are in the Cheshire area and you're thinking about selling, you need to reach out to us at theoneteamct.com. All right. We had those 6 new listings. We also had 15 under contract and 5 closings. We had under contracts in Waterford, Ledyard, Salem, Groton, Meriden, Montville, Eastline, Cheshire, Trumbull, Durham, Montville, North Branford, Montville, and Guilford. Man, we were busy in Montville. What do we have? 1, 2, 3, 4 in Montville. All right, 5 closings. Congratulations to our buyers, sellers, investors. We had closings in Preston, Westbrook, Milford, Wallingford, and Stafford. All right, open houses. We've got a couple going on today. One right when the show wraps at 68 Norton Ave in Guilford, Connecticut from 12 to 2 p.m. Brian, you swung by that one last Sunday, that Alex Pepe listing?
I did, yes.
What did you think of that master bath? I mean, that shower is like insanity.
I actually did not go into the bathroom, so I saw your comment on my post. He was like, the master bath.
It's insane. It's probably like a $20,000 master bathroom.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
And then, Rob, you got somebody manning an open house from you today going on right now during the show, right?
Yes, 11 to 1.
And that is at that new listing at 7 Chester Court in Salem?
26 Court. Yep.
Got my numbers all mixed up. In 26 Salem. Chester Court, Salem, Connecticut, going on right now and goes on until 1 p.m. So head on over there and check those out. going on tomorrow, Sunday, April 14th, for Mahoney Road in Colchester, Connecticut from 11 to 1. 68 Norton Ave, another opportunity to get over to check out that ranch, which backs up to the marsh in Guilford. 68 Norton Ave in Guilford, yeah, going on from 12 to 2.
Walk to the green from there.
Walk to the green. As always, on Sunday, we have the residences at 66 High Street open from 12 to 2 p.m. And Rob, you got one more opportunity to head over to 26 Chester Court.
No, right? Actually, head on over to 1-5 Town Street tomorrow, Sunday. I'll be there. 11 to 1.
11 to 1. All right. Rob's got too many listings for me to keep up with here. So
I got a lot.
Today, during the show, we've got 26 Chester Court. And then tomorrow, we've got 1-5 Lime Street, right?
Town Street.
Town Street.
In Lime.
In Lime. Town Street in Lime. And what time is that one going on to?
11 to 1.
11 to 1. All right. And that's going to do it for this week's One Team Weekly Rewind, brought to you by Service Station Equipment. And fellas, that's also going to do it for us on this break. So we will be right back for the final segment, where we are going to get a little deeper into generational buyers and who is the biggest buying demographic when we come back on CT Real Estate Radio on 94.9 News Now and Stimulating Talk. Welcome back to CT Real Estate Radio. I am Chaz Cook, joined by Rob Wallace of the One Team at William Ravis Real Estate, and here with Brian Skelly, Mortgage Guru from William Ravis Mortgage. We've talked about interest rates. We've talked about inflation. We've gone off on tangents on everything, and we brought you the One Team Weekly Rewind. And so now we're going to wrap up the show with talking about some generational trends report. And this has always been an interesting one to dive deeper into, because we've seen some flip-flopping the last couple of years, right? Heading into the pandemic, the millennial generation was the biggest buyers. And then we saw a little bit of a flip when interest rates got high and a lot of the boomers who had lived in their houses for 20, 25 years decided to pull some of that equity out and become cash buyers. And they kind of took over. And now we've seen the pendulum swing back to a different direction yet again. This is a NowBAM article, and it goes on to say the National Association of Realtors has released its 2024 Home Buyers and Sellers Generational Trends Report, showing millennials back in the lead, surpassing baby boomers and accounting for 38% of all home buyers.
Really?
Yeah.
I got to tell you a millennial story. I'm going to interrupt you here.
All right, let's do it. I love a good millennial story.
So from 2008 to 2012, I worked for Wells Fargo Home Mortgage, which, if you know what was going on in the real estate world after 2008, there was hundreds of mortgage companies are going out of business left and right. And pretty much every mortgage person went to go work for Wells Fargo.
Okay.
In 2012, Wells Fargo did 33% of all mortgages in the country.
33% in the country.
One out of three was done with Wells Fargo. Because it was like the one bank that everybody was pretty sure was not going to go out of business.
Right. And
we used to have these meetings every year, these big sales meetings, like hundreds of mortgage people in this big conference room and some hotel down in Fairfield or Westchester. And every year they'd be like, the millennials are coming. The millennials are coming. And we'll be like, you know, and there was so little demand for houses. Like, houses would go on for sale and they would sit there for like 11 months and like people weren't buying houses. And it was like kind of a hard time to be in the industry because it was so hard to sell a house.
Well, that was also the time like the Gen Xers were like the biggest buying population, right? And the Gen Xers is like
a tiny generation. Yeah.
It's a tiny generation too. It might be one of the most stubborn generations you've ever seen in your life. Right. I have a brother and a sister who are both like in the prime of Gen Xers. And let me tell you, like, their path to growing up was drastically different than most people's, right? They lived through the 80s and, you know, the mid-90s.
They're one step above the millennials.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So, and I hover on the cusp of it. I'm like, Skelly and I are like a year off or two years
off.
Yeah,
I'm like right in between X and millennials. I'm a really old millennial.
There you go. We're like the elder millennials.
Yes.
There's a quick, there's a great stand-up comedy.
I knew you were going to say that. Elder comedian.
Elder millennial with Eliza.
Eliza.
Check that out on Netflix, guys. Really Elder millennial. She is.
Yeah. If you were born between 1980 and 1983, that special is for you.
It is. It was written especially for you. But anyway, sorry.
So like, and every year we'd have these meetings and we'd be like, well, where are the millennials? They're not buying any houses. Where are they? And like year after year. And so at the beginning of the show, I said, you got to be weary of the forecast. But this is one forecast that did come true, but it took a lot longer than they predicted. They kept being like, oh, next year, the millennials are going to buy houses. But it did finally come to pass, right in hand in hand with COVID,
right?
The tidal wave of millennials buying houses. So that's my millennial story.
Well, and that's an interesting point, too. And it doesn't go into this article, but another article I've read went on to break down that millennials started the home buying process much later than the boomers did.
Yeah.
Right. So most boomers, 20,
24. They did everything later. They got married later. They had kids later.
Right. That's true. Most millennials don't start home shopping until 26, 28, right? They finished college. Maybe they lived at home for a couple of years. Then they got married. So, you know, now they're 26, 27.
And COVID kind of accelerated that too, because you had, you know, half of the millennials were kind of like in their 30s getting married and having babies. Mm-hmm. And then you also had a bunch of millennials that were in their late 20s. They were like living in like New York City. They were going to the bars every night.
Yep.
And all of a sudden COVID happens. And it's like being 28 years old in New York City is not that much fun
anymore.
It's not
cool, yeah. Like you're no longer the cool kid.
Yeah, you can't, there's nowhere to go. You're living in this like 600 square foot apartment. And then so you have, they're like, all right, well, maybe we should move to Connecticut and buy a house, you know? And and so all you kind of accelerated
it. One of those 49 towns in Jersey. Right. Yeah. Just go over the bridge. Just go over the GW and live in Jersey.
Yeah. I'm sure New Jersey did pretty well with the millennials during COVID too. So and so that brings us to our present day. Not enough houses for everybody.
Not enough houses. Yeah. So according to NAR's 2024 Generational Trends Report, younger millennials ages 25 to 33 and older millennials ages 34 to 43 combined account for 38% of all U.S. homebuyers, up from 28% the year before, making them the largest generational group. But here's the caveat to that. Millennials are the biggest buying demographic. Who is the biggest selling demographic?
Ooh.
Ooh.
Hmm. I haven't scrolled ahead to see the answer.
Come on.
I'm gonna guess the boomers, because they're not tied down by the interest rates, is my guess.
I have to jump in with him on that as well. That's my guess.
You guys are going for the boomers?
Yes.
You are correct. I'm looking for the exact percentage here. Let me just get that number for you. So for sellers, young boomers are at 26% and older boomers are at 19%. So that puts them at, 45% of the sellers. For millennials, we are at 23% for sellers. And then the silent generation, which we had to look up what that meant. That is for people ages 78 to up. We're just going to say 78 and older. They are at 6% of sellers, but only 4% of buyers. So most of them have already done that downsizing move.
Right.
And just to elaborate on my comment about the interest rate for some of you newer listeners that haven't heard this. I mean, one of the things that's been happening is interest rates being, a lot of people have low interest rates that they got during COVID, rates in the twos and threes, and those folks don't want to sell, which, beside the fact that we just haven't been building enough houses for the population, the fact that many people like myself who live in a home with a low interest rate are not wanting to move. And so those boomers that either have no mortgage or a small mortgage, you know, if you only have a $50,000 or $100,000 mortgage, it's a lot easier to just give it up and go somewhere else than somebody who's got a big mortgage at a low rate they don't want to give up.
That's true.
So here we go. I'm curious as to you guys' opinion on this rate. So we have younger millennials, we have older millennials, we have younger boomers and older boomers, and then we've got Gen Xers. Is it just because they're such a small part of the population that they don't get like, well, I want to be a young Gen Xer?
I think the number of years.
I don't want to be an old Gen Xer, but Gen X, it's just got the best name too, like from Generation X.
I think it's a small window of ages. Like, I mean, they're saying millennials is from, according to this article we're looking at, is 25 to 43.
Yeah, so it's like 1980 to
18 years, whereas Gen X is only 44 to 58. So, of course, it's a smaller generation. Who the heck comes up with these titles and names and ages and everything?
I just want to have the title Gen X.
I'm like, still trying to grasp which one's which.
Gen X is only
Googling. Yeah.
There's 14 years of Gen X people and 18 years of millennials. But millennials are the kids of the baby boomers. So there was a lot of baby boomers and they made a lot of babies.
They made a lot of babies.
Yeah. And
definitely.
Those are the millennials.
Well, the older boomers produced the Gen Xers and the younger boomers produced the millennials.
Yeah. I guess the millennials are not producing.
The Gen Zers are at the bottom. There's only 3% of them looking to buy and only 2% of them looking to sell right now.
All comes back to inflation. Everything costs more money. Yeah. It's kind of expensive to have four or five kids these days.
But here's an interesting stat. Older millennials, that'd be Skelly and I. Rob, do you fall into the are you an elder millennial too?
I am.
Okay. Older millennials also have the highest household income of any generation at $127,000, followed by Gen Xers with a median household income of $126,933. All right. So this drives me crazy when they break these numbers down like that. Okay. Older millennials, $127,000, followed by Gen Xers, $126,933. We're talking about $67.
Like,
just put them in the same vault. $67. Yeah. Like, really? I guess just to make the point, you have to like differentiate it, but like $67, well, yeah. Don't go to Starbucks for like, you know, twice a week.
And there you go.
I mean, I have heard that like they say your 40s are your earning years. Like those are typically, you know, their peak earning years is, I don't have a reliable source to cite on this, but I've heard several people have told me that.
I was talking to, we can call him a mentor of mine. He's a buddy of mine who's retired from Pfizer. And, you know, he said his 20s were all about being dumb. His 30s were all about starting a family. His 40s is when he started to kind of grow and, you know, put away and plan for his future. And then he said, my 50s came and it went back to like, I was like 25 again. He's like, I kind of reverted back and I did that until I was 62 and retired.
Oh, okay.
So he's kind of like broken
up.
Good
way,
yeah. Your 20s is about surviving, right? Yeah, we'll just use that for lack of a better term. Your 30s is all about growing up. Your 40s is all about becoming secure.
And public service announcement, if you're listening to the show and you are in your 20s, if you can save some money when you're 20, in your 20, you look at a chart of how much money you're going to have when you're older. If you can save it 20 years early, it's staggering.
If you are in your 20s and listening to this show,
put some money away.
Break the mold. Don't do what we all did in our 20s,
great
right?
Great point, fellas. Great point.
I was a good saver in my 20s. Don't loot me.
Learn from us.
I'm sure you could have saved more than you did, though, because you lived.
You have no idea how thrifty I was.
Really?
My friend was like, Skelly, how come you don't have a snowblower? I'm like, that's $300. I'm not spending $300 on a snowblower.
That's why I don't have one. I was like, my driveway's not big enough for me to spend $300. Yeah.
Although, yeah, that was before I got married. It's harder to be cheap when you're married.
Right. anyways, it goes on to say, among home buyers in 2024, the main reasons given for recently purchasing a home varied by generation. For buyers under the age of 59, the primary reason is still a desire to own a place of their own. Among buyers aged 59 and up, the number one reason for their recent home purchase was their desire to live closer to family and friends. Makes sense. Mm-hmm. Followed by a desire for a smaller home. Also makes sense. Like if it's just me and the missus and our three kids all have their own homes, do I want to live in a 3,000 square foot home that I have to clean? No.
Hey.
I don't want to clean my 1,000 foot square house.
I know, right?
1,000 square foot house. One of the highlights of the NAR report was the increase in first-time buyers across many generations. 32% of all home buyers made their first home purchase, up from 26% last year. So that's a really promising stat because we know how hard it is for a first-time home buyer to get an offer accepted in this competitive market that we've been in for the last 4 years.
Very hard.
So great stat to see that. I mean, it's not a huge number. I mean, 32.
I'm surprised.
It's up 6% though.
Yeah.
Younger millennials account for the largest generational group of first-time buyers, with their share growing year over year from 70 to 75%. Next are older millennials at 44%, with Gen Xers ages 44 to 58 coming in third at 24%. So Gen Z, here we go. We break this one down. Ages 18 to 24 so far only account for 3% of all buyers. What's notable is that 31% of those buyers are single women.
Oh.
The largest share of any generational group. Way to go, ladies. That's what I like to see. 31%. So one out of three Gen Z buyers is a single lady.
I love
that. That is freaking awesome.
I love it.
Way to go, ladies. Keep going. Keep showing those boys who are playing video games thinking they're going to be the next YouTube star how it's done. They're going to go out and buy houses.
We're going to like redo the Beyonce song about buying houses.
And you're going to be sitting in your gaming chair in your parents' basement for the next 3 months.
Yep.
Anyways. Sorry, we went off on a couple little tirades here, but that's also going to wrap it up for us on this week's show. Fellas, any final words?
Thank you for tuning in and checking us out.
Go to ScheduleLoanAppointment.com.
ScheduleLoanAppointment.com. Thank you, Cooper. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Martin, and the boys and girls at Service Station Equipment. And we will be back next week with a fresh new episode of CT Real Estate Radio on 94.9 News Now and Stimulating Talk.